Ladies and gentlemen, our first case for this morning, not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, is Cashware against Cashware USA Japan.
Good job.
JPN. Mr. Reed.
Okay, thanks.
May it please the court, my name is Philip Reed and I represent TMG Creations, Cedric Reingold, Mary Gleckler, and Cashware LLC. They are the plaintiffs, they're the counter defendants, they're the appellants and the cross appellees. Now, even though in the context of this appeal, which is an appeal from the award of cross motions for summary judgment, there are quite a few issues presented, at its core, this is primarily a dispute over the terms of a single contract, a trademark license, and we submit that on that critical and rather confined issue, the district court's determination was correct.
So are you referring to the January, or to the 2010
agreement? I am referring to, yes, it's January 2010, exclusive trademark agreement for licensed goods.
And Cashware LLC is the same as TMG for our purposes.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Today.
That's correct. Okay. I will often stray into using the word.
Don't stray. Say TMG, will you please?
Thank
so
you.
We don't have Cashware being thrown around on both sides.
Okay, I will use the word.
The inability of the lawyers to simplify this case I find very disturbing. The repeated reference to multiple parties, even though they're, you know, they're two groups, right? One is Seltzer, one is TMG, right? And then FBC is the only really one that isn't clearly a part of one of the groups. Isn't that true?
It really is, Your Honor, and I appreciate it. We struggle with the same difficulty in trying to be both precise and simplify things, but I will use TMG and Seltzer, and instead of Flat B, FBC, I'll use Flat B, since that seems to be the phrase that's used most often in the contracts. TMG is the licensor, Seltzer is the licensee, and Flat B is the distributor that the licensee
now,
is distributor.
I don't understand. One of your concerns, you think that FBC, I call it that, Flat B if you want, it's trademarking its non-chenille stuff, that is a violation that entitles you to terminate the entire deal and take back Japan from Seltzer?
What we submit, Your Honor, is...
Well, is that your argument, yes or no?
Standing alone...
No, yes or no?
My argument would be that would be one permissible remedy for that particular breach, yes.
No, I don't think so, because I don't understand how you can be harmed. You say that FBC makes an inferior product, you know, it doesn't have chenille. It's an inferior product. Why do you care, and they just sell in Japan, why do you care that they have trademarked their inferior product?
Well, it isn't that they've trademarked their inferior product. Instead,
they have
registered the Cashware trademarks.
Yeah, but they use it to sell their inferior product, right?
They contend that the products that they sell in Japan are actually superior.
No, but you say it's inferior.
What we say
it's inferior, right? And that they've dispatched, you know, right? Isn't that your position?
What
it's
we
an inferior
say,
product because it doesn't have chenille. Sorry.
I just to clarify, I thought that there were two aspects to this, and then actually I actually have another question for you. One is the Cashware that they're selling in Japan. They say has a higher thread count, although they actually say tread count, but thread count, and so the chenille product is better, but they also have this other non-chenille Cashware RE product, right? Which isn't chenille at all, and so doesn't belong under this trademark. But I want to back us up, because trademarks, of course, are national. There's no international trademark regime. And it's my understanding, from looking at this declaration of Yutaka Miyoshi in the record, that Cashware LLC in fact, registered two trademarks in Japan way back in 2001, long before FLATB registered anything. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so you had secured Japanese trademark rights because of this 2001 registration, and are you now saying that FLATB was not entitled under the terms of its license to register anything using the word cashmere?
Correct, but let me correct one other thing. FLATB does not have a license. The license is in favor of Seltzer. FLATB is simply Seltzer's distributor. Okay. Now what has occurred, we submit, but the Seltzer parties disagree with that, is that the license was in fact assigned to FLATB and Sirius.
Now this is confusing.
I'm sorry, who registered the trademark?
The original
Japan.
The original trademarks were registered by Cashware LLC, which is one of my clients.
Yeah, but you're not interested. That's not, no. You are complaining about a trademarking in Japan. And is that by FBC or by Seltzer or
those
by
were
USA Japan or what?
After the license assignment, there were registrations of the trademarks by FLATB and Sirius.
And that's what you're complaining about.
That is a very small part of what we're complaining about.
But I thought that was the ground on which you argue that you can cancel the basic contract.
In a larger sense, what we are arguing...
Excuse me?
In a larger sense, what we are arguing
no,
is
No,
that,
no, answer my question.
That is one of the grounds, yes.
That's one of the grounds. Okay, what are the other grounds?
The other grounds are, in general, they are treating the trademark as though it is their property rather than something that they have licensed there. They do a number of things. Number one, they've registered the trademarks, and they shouldn't have registered the trademarks. They're asserting a domain over those trademarks.
So what? How does that hurt DMG?
It hurts us because now our trademark is diluted, and they are...
How is it diluted? Because they're selling in Japan, and you're selling the rest of the world.
The trademark license, it's a limited license. It says you are granted the rights under the license that the license gives you. And they have exceeded that, number one, with the Cashware Ray line.
But I'm asking you how you are harmed. If they're selling in Japan and you can't sell in Japan, how does their taking out trademarks on what they're selling, you know, the two types of products that Judge Wood mentioned, how does that hurt you?
The license gives the licensor control over the trademark. Now you have a licensee.
Please answer me. How does it hurt you?
My answer is it hurts us because now they are able to sell products that the licensor...
Well, I don't understand. They're just selling in Japan, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're selling cashmere products in Japan.
In Japan, and you don't sell in Japan.
Well,
so, right?
But the principle would be that they are now diluting the cashmere name by selling products that the licensor and the owner of the trademark does not want sold.
So let me take a different approach to this because when I read through all of this material, and I share Judge Posner's frustration with how it was presented, but it looked to me that one of the important things going on is what appears to me to be a classic gray market kind of situation. You sell cashmere in the United States. They have a license to sell cashmere in Japan, but there were intermediaries, there were companies in the United States buying legitimately trademarked cashmere products who were then transshipping those products to Japan. That's a gray market. That's a legitimate good. It's not a counterfeit. It's a legitimate good that's being sold in a second market. Now, very often, it's the trademark owner itself in the original country that doesn't want the gray market products to be there, and we actually have trade laws in the United States that prohibit that. But it's very much like an antitrust where sometimes a manufacturer wants a perfectly exclusive distribution system because they think that will maximize their presence in a market, and sometimes they don't. Some manufacturers say, you know, we're very happy for, you know, any comer who wants to sell our product. And I thought, in essence, what you were saying was you have the right to sell cashmere, of course, in the United States. But it's fine with you if companies in the United States want to buy in bulk and send it to anywhere in the world, including Japan. And I understood you to be saying that the scope of the license that Flat B has in Japan was not so broad as to preclude legitimate goods from elsewhere.
That's precisely correct, except for the phrase, fine with us. The way we would really prefer to say it is, we don't have the ability and, more importantly, the duty to control the downstream
and
sales activities.
And you don't have the desire to either. I mean, if you wanted, there are plenty of companies that spend a lot of money trying to make sure that transshipments of the type that I just described don't happen. And they're very concerned about it. But again, it's a business strategy decision. So if you don't mind having your U.S. branded cashmere goods going, among other places, to Japan, then I think that begins to suggest a theory of harm, why you might care what Flat B is doing or not doing in Japan.
It is a worldwide market, and the licensor, the owner of the trademark, does care whether products are being sold.
Well, you just say you didn't care. You're in a fork, because of course they have this argument that really you are cheating because you're selling to distributors whom you know, who you know are active in Japan, are reselling in Japan. So that's why you say you're indifferent, you just sell, you don't know where the distributors, where the product ends up. If that's true and you have this indifference, why do you care about what FBC is doing in Japan? Trademarking, selling inferior products, selling a superior product, right? You're not interested.
TMG cares because it's the licensor and it wants to make sure that its trademark is not...
Why? What's the problem? FBC isn't going to sell outside of Japan. You're not going to sell in Japan.
But
what do you care what they do? Are you worried about tourists go to Japan, buy inferior product, blame you? Is that the idea?
Well, that's part of it.
What's the other part?
What the record shows in this case
is... What is the other part?
What the record shows
in
this case.
I forget what the record shows. I asked you, what is the other part of the harm you incur?
There is an international market, including over the internet, for these goods. They go back and forth across international lines. Most of the goods that are at issue in this litigation were sold on eBay or the Japanese equivalent of eBay. Someone in Japan sitting on their computer terminal ordering product from a customer of TMG in Los Angeles. So given the international exchange of these products, it does matter to the licensor.
So you're worried that this this customer in Japan, he gets this product from the United States, and then what? He's got his product, he likes, you think it's better than what FBC does. So what's the harm to you?
Well, the harm would be that the brand is degraded by inferior products or non-authorized
products.
Well,
I don't understand, because you say the person in Japan who orders from the distributor in the United States is getting your superior product. So he or she is pleased. How are you harmed?
Well,
in fact, you're helped, because now this person will say, well, I'm not going to buy local. I'm going to buy, from America, because it's a better product.
But the reverse could also be true, Your Honor. The person sitting in Japan could have bought a non-chenille, non-conforming product from the licensee in Japan and find out that they don't like this cashmere product, and it's not something that has been authorized by the owner of the trademark, who specifically reserved the right to control quality standards and entered into a license agreement that said only chenille products can be sold bearing the cashmere name.
But there's another aspect of this case, too, which is the California litigation. And it was my understanding that one of your complaints is that the settlements that emerged from that litigation actually forbade your U.S. customers from buying your product at all, not just from sending it to Japan, but that they were overbroad settlements. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. We contend that those agreements, which are agreements, they're not core...
No, I understand they're contracts.
Contracts. That those violate the terms of the non-compete.
So these settlements, which were with seltzer parties, basically, are actually settlements that are shutting down your market even for U.S. sales.
They have eliminated certain customers who can no longer buy product from us, including in the U.S.
Including in the U.S. because of, they think that it's just so hard to monitor, and you've never made any promise to monitor anyway, that they're not going to be sold in the U.S. Is there a royalty arrangement under this license with Flat B?
There is no royalty arrangement between the licensor, TMG, and the licensee.
So you don't get any profit from any sales Flat B makes in Japan?
That's correct.
So your profit motive is to have the sales go through the U.S.?
Well, there's certainly no question that we would derive revenue from any sales we made to people, that TMG made to customers in Los Angeles who sold products throughout the world on the internet. That's true.
So explain to me this June 5, 2006 distribution agreement, which says, I think this is the one I'm thinking of. Well, there's one of the agreements where 100% of the benefit is given to...
Correct, Your Honor. That agreement was entered into 10 months after the asset purchase and after the license agreement was entered into. And in that agreement, the original licensee, a company called Cashware Comforts LLC, purported to assign all of its rights under the license to three parties, to a company called USA Japan, to Flat B, and to Sirius. And the contract is internally inconsistent.
This is the October 10 license,
yes,
distribution agreement, where Comforts gives 100% of all the rights to this USA Japan, I'm just going to call it that because I can't pronounce JPN, to this USA Japan holding company. And then Comforts also grants 10% of all of the rights to Flat B and Sirius. So it's granted 110% of all of the rights.
Worse than that, it also says that in the following page, it says that 100% of the rights under the license are being granted to Flat B and Sirius. So it is, you know, sort of hopelessly confusing.
Was that just a draft? Was that a final agreement?
This is the only agreement that we have, and the parties have treated it as though it is, in fact, the agreement. Yes.
But a big part of your argument hinges on the validity of that 10% grant to Flat B and Sirius, because that's the way you bring them in to some kind of contractual arrangement.
What we would say is 10% or 100%. The agreement also says 100% is being given to them. So yes, part of our argument is...
But isn't it wholly owned by Miyakawa, FBC?
FBC is wholly owned, and so is Sirius, wholly owned by Hiroshi Miyakawa.
Correct. Well, if he trademarks or something, why is Seltzer responsible for that?
Because FBC, Flat B, and Sirius are now in... If this license agreement is to be read according to its face, they are now assignees of the license, and they are in privity with the licensor. And
they have a license for the Cashmere trademark, saying. Mr. Miyakawa didn't originate the Cashmere trademark. FBC, his companies, FBC and Sirius, you're saying, are licensees of you, ultimately, for the Cashmere trademark.
They are now both, according to this contract, and in fact, acting as though they are the licensees. USA Japan is a completely non-operational entity. It's not even a holding company. It owns nothing. It has no revenue. It has no employees.
Well, did your deal with TMG require it to maintain a certain level of quality on the products it sells in Japan?
Yes, correct. The TMG, as the licensor, had an agreement with the licensee where the licensee had to maintain the standards set by the licensor. And instead, what we have in this situation is a licensee who has now said, we have the right to create our own higher standards and therefore treat any other goods sold throughout the rest of the world as infringing on the higher standards that we have unilaterally imposed in Japan. And therefore, we can treat any third-party reselling goods on the gray market as infringing on our trademark license. And that is purely a unilateral action that the licensee has taken in purportedly increasing the quality of the goods. We disagree that that actually happened, but that's a factual dispute, that they have elevated the standards in Japan unilaterally and without authorization, and in fact in contravention of the license, which says the licensor shall control the standards, and then they turn around and say goods coming in on the gray market from outside Japan are therefore infringing. And they would have, and this is really the critical point from TMG's standpoint, they would impose upon TMG a duty that it's not reflected in the license in any way to monitor the downstream sales of its customers. They're not distributors, they're just customers. There are no distributor relationships, there are no long-term relationships. It's simply a purchase order comes in and TMG fills it. So they're imposing duty, they have manufactured or fabricated this supposed difference in quality, which they're not entitled to do, and they use that to bootstrap themselves into a situation where they say goods coming in from outside Japan are infringing on
their
market.
Would there be anything to prevent you from saying to some of your American distributors, we want you to sell in Japan, we want to take back that Japanese market through our distributors? Anything wrong with that?
There could be, and the reason is that there
are... Well, I don't like there could be. Is there wrong? Is it right? Can you do that?
The issue would be if we established them as distributors for Japan, that would be a problem.
No, I'm just saying you have distributors, they distribute all over the world, we'll say, and you say, look, we'd really like you to sell in Japan. We'd like to, you know, smother seltzer. We don't like their product there. So, you know, we just encourage you to do that.
I believe that the facts that Your Honor is proposing tread dangerously close to establishing them as distributors rather than arm's-length customers that simply buy product. And there are two types of exclusivity granted by the license. The first type of exclusivity is that Flatby is the only distributor of cashwear permitted in the territory of Japan. And that is a very important and valuable right that Seltzer seems to believe isn't valuable at all. But no one else can set up a cashwear shop there. No one else can put cashwear over the door of their store. No one else can be a cashwear distributor in Japan. And if you have a factual scenario that suggests that distributors are being created to infiltrate the Japanese market, that could be a problem. It might tread close to that. You have to examine the particular facts. The other type of exclusivity granted under the license is that any purchase orders originating from the territory of Japan that TMG receives, TMG has to refer them back to Flatby, the exclusive distributor in Japan. And there is no factual issue as to TMG's violation of either of those prohibitions. It has never established a distributor in Japan, and it has never...
But is there evidence that what FBC does, what it produces, and so on, is actually harming sales of TMG? And you say they're threatening you around the world or something with infringement actions?
Two concepts there. One is any time that one of our customers is found to have sold a good over the internet to Japan, they sue that customer. And so, yes, they are interfering with customer relationships, and that really is an important harm to TMG.
So and the with, remedy you want is to cancel, well, is really to get rid of Seltzer. You wouldn't have any rights in Japan anymore, right? That's what you want.
We believe that one of the remedies that a jury
That's
should be allowed
want.
To consider is termination of the agreement.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you want.
Several material breaches would amount to that as a remedy, yes. Yeah.
But that's the remedy you want. That's my point.
It is one remedy that we have sought.
What do you mean the one? It's the one. It's the main one you want. You want to get them out of Japan, and you'll get Japan back.
Somebody else actually manufactures this stuff, don't they? Isn't it made in Taiwan or
yes,
someplace else?
Yes, it's made by independent factories in Taiwan and China,
so
correct.
So it gets shipped into Japan for really solely a distribution function by Flatby.
Yes, and that's an important right of exclusivity. I am desperately past my time, but an important exclusive right granted to Flatby is it's the only one who can import goods directly into Japan from the factories, and that's an important exclusive right. Your Honors, if there are no more questions
right now.
Okay, I will
let you sit down. I'll probably give you a minute, and we'll see how
thank
it
you.
Goes. Mr. Klein.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Rob Klein. I represent the seltzer parties, including Flatby and Sirius. We see this case more as a breach of contract case than a trademark case, primarily. And Mr. Seltzer, I know you're, of course, familiar with the facts, but essentially I think it's important to point out that Mr. Seltzer started this company with a modest investment, and he grew it to $7 million in sales from his efforts.
But what we're trying to sort out, at that point, there's almost a metastasis of companies. I mean, there are all these entities out there, and it seems to me that our case is primarily focused on the package of rights that were secured in Japan, who has them,
correct,
and what potential breaches of a network of contractual arrangements. Some of them are trademark licenses, which is a form of contract,
right,
as far as I'm concerned, and others are different. And I guess the simpler you can make your position, the happier I'm going to be.
I understand. Yeah, I agree with that, too. It was very complicated. I think the essential contract...
And your brief was just all over the block.
I apologize, but the problem is this case was so complicated.
There's no excuse for that.
Okay. The main contracts that we're concerned with is the distribution contract between Cashwear Comforts and Flatby in 2006.
June 5, 2006.
Right. And then the other important contract would be the asset purchase agreement of January 1st, 2010, and along that was that exclusive trademark license agreement. The asset purchase agreement gave to the seltzer parties the perpetual exclusive right license to sell their brand of cashwear goods in Japan exclusively through their distributor, Flatby.
Right, so that flows from the fact that Comforts had, in 2001, registered trademarks in Japan. You know, your U.S. trademark doesn't do you any good. You know, you have to go and
they did
register in another country. So they have that, and they're the licensee. And that's why this case is so strangely inside out.
It is a little bit. But, again, you know, I guess the court seems to be focusing a lot on the trademark.
What's the function of USA Japan?
USA Japan was created by Seltzer to hold the contract rights to sell in Japan. And the reason Seltzer did that is he wanted to make Mr. Miyakawa sort of a partner. So he gave him a 10% interest in the contract rights. That's all it did.
Where does he do that? Can you point me to the exact contract in the record?
What he does is...
You say that a lot.
Yeah.
But...
what he did is... I can't cite specifically the exhibit number.
How can that possibly be? I mean, because you have this peculiar October 1, 2010 license agreement, which Comforts grants 100% of all rights, title, and interests under the license to USA Japan to use the license mark, the cashwear mark, in Japan. And then in the next section, 2.2, Comforts grants 10% of all rights, title, and interests under the license agreement to FBC,
right,
Flatby, and Sirius. To use the, I mean, it's the same language. I pored over it. I tried to see if there was a comma that was different.
No.
There was nothing.
I know.
So it's
somebody,
gibberish.
Whoever drafted it made a mistake.
It's obvious. One of these people who thinks lawyers are no good, and occasionally lawyers actually have their use.
Somebody made a mistake. I mean, obviously, the person who did it doesn't have very good math skills, but the concept was that...
But we can't go to the concept.
Well,
I mean, this is not summary judgment material if you've got... 100% and then 10%.
But there are documents that show that 10%, and I can't remember what exhibit number.
So there are
number
extrinsic
is.
Documents. I mean, there are certainly disputes, and since you push very hard that there's no privity between the USA, the the TMG parties, I'll say generically, and Flappy and Sirius, you've got to get rid of that 10% language, and I don't see how you can do it on summary judgment.
Well, there are, I think there were documents with this, and I can't remember.
You sure didn't point to them in your brief.
Oh, well, there were so many documents in this case, it was very difficult to get everything.
But that's what you're paid for.
But I think we did. I'm sure we did reference those documents, because when we talked about the creation of Casual USA JPN, we did show certificates, and I remember seeing a certain certificate as part of the exhibits on summary judgment that showed that 10% went to Mr. Miyakawa.
But I haven't seen that, and I'm just trying to sort out, since I really do think a pivot of all of this is your effort to separate out Mr. Miyakawa's companies sufficiently so that you're completely washing your hands of everything that he does. And that's quite a dance, because he does have the right, at Flatby and Sirius, we'll say, do have the right to use the Cashmere trademark in Japan. So either they're infringers, and they're using the trademark without permission, or there's a chain of permission from the trademark owner in Japan, TMG, ultimately, through whatever assignments, contracts, licenses, whatever you want to call them, to Flatby and Sirius. And if there is that chain, then what they do is reachable.
Well, the trademark that Flatby registered in Japan was International Class 35. The ones that were registered initially were International Class 23 and 24.
I saw that, but then the question arises, why does Flatby have the right to go registering under the Cashmere name at all, whether it's one type of fabric or another type of fabric? I think that, in other words, I don't find that a terribly persuasive
answer. Well, the evidence that we submitted was that under the asset purchase agreement, it was TMG's responsibility to pay for these registrations, and the evidence was that Mr. Miyakawa, or Flatby, went to them and asked them. They said that his attorney says we should get additional protection, and he wanted him to go register him, and Mr. Reingold of TMG refused to pay for it. So what happened was Flatby then, to make sure their rights were protected, went ahead and registered it.
But that's where in the contract does it give them the right to do that?
They're not a part of the contract.
Then they infringe.
I don't think they infringe.
I don't see where, just because somebody, just the owner of the trademark, decides that it, I'll use that word, doesn't want to register some additional trademark, that means that other people get to go register things under the same name. It's Cashmere. That's the trademark. It's not whether it's 35 or 28 or 17 or whatever other name.
I don't think it was a question of them not wanting it registered. It was a question of who's going to pay for it.
It doesn't matter. When the TMG folks said we don't want to pay, that should have been the end of it. It doesn't. It's, you see this as a green light, you know, for Joe Smith to go to Japan and register a Cashmere trademark. Well, anybody in the world could do so under your logic.
Flatby had the exclusive rights to Japan. Nobody else had a right to sell in Japan.
But they had a right to a certain package of things, and apparently Mr. Miyakawa wanted a right to more things, this 35 class. And I don't see why, just because the licensor doesn't go ahead with that for whatever reason, they don't want to spend the money this year, I don't really care what the reason, why that gave Mr. Miyakawa the green light to go ahead and just expand his license.
Well, I guess he wanted to protect his brand that he spent so much money establishing.
But it's not his brand. It's their trademark.
Well, but that's another issue. That's another issue in the case.
It's not another issue. Cashmere is not Mr. Miyakawa. You have never argued that Cashmere was his trademark.
No, what we did argue, though, is there were basically two separate divisions of Cashmere. There was Cashmere Japan and Cashmere USA.
Well, what you said that USA Japan was created in order to hold the contract rights, which I might include the trademarks. So is your contention that when Hayakawa got a 10% interest in USA Japan, that 10% included some trademark rights?
We haven't said that.
No?
All we're saying is that there was a, I don't think they even thought about that. They had a contract. They had the rights to sell in Japan under a contract. And what Mr. Seltzer did is to create some more solidarity with Mr. Miyakawa is he says, okay, he created an entity. He transferred just the contract rights into the entity. and he gave Mr. Miyakawa 10%. So
which you can't document anywhere.
I think we did document it. We have the October agreement, which I submit is an error in drafting, and then we have the certificates that were part of it that just show that he had 10%. I mean, there is a certificate, a membership certificate, that shows he has 10%.
What is the significance of this? I mean, you said that FBC could trademark this because no one else would pay for it. So what is that? What does that have to do with USA, Japan, and the 10%?
You mean the right to register the trademark?
Yeah.
You know, that was something that Mr. Miyakawa's attorneys told him he needed to do. We weren't part of that at all. I mean, he had advice from his Japanese attorneys that said that there's a little area here that you should protect. And the trademark laws apparently in Japan are a little different. It's not the first of use. It's the first to register. So we weren't privy to that. All we know is that he requested...
So why didn't Comforts or Seltzer, why didn't it register? You're saying FBC says to protect your trademark in Japan, you have to register. So why didn't Seltzer
because
register?
Because this issue about this International Class 35 did not arise when Seltzer owned the companies. And I'm not even sure. Maybe it arose. Maybe there was some other use. I'm not sure. I think 35 deals with...
Well, you've lost me. I don't understand. I thought you said FBC said to Seltzer, we need to have registration of the trademark.
I think he said that...
And then apparently Seltzer won't pay for that. So FBC pays for it and gets the trademark.
Isn't that what you said happened? I don't think so. If I said that, I misspoke. I know that the issue came up after Seltzer had transferred the company to TMG. I thought that Mr. Miyakawa went to TMG. He might have gone to Seltzer, and then Seltzer referred him to TMG, but it happened after Seltzer no longer owned the company. When Seltzer owned the company, he had International Class 23 and 24 registered. Now, if there was some additional use that arose after he sold the company that required registration of International Class 35, I'm not aware of it, and that was between Mr. Miyakawa and his Japanese attorneys, and then they came to TMG at that point and says, we want to register this, and you have an obligation to pay for it, and they didn't pay for it.
There's no evidence in the record, as far as I know, about the Japanese law of trademark. When you have cashmere designated in Class 23 and you have cashmere designated in Class 24, that anybody in the world can register cashmere designated in any other class.
Well,
Japanese trademark law isn't that different. Everybody's under the World Trade Organization.
It's a little different in the sense of the rights. In other words, I think it's first to register as opposed to first to use.
But the question is, are you the first to register if two other trademarks exist for the cashmere name? I mean, I think you're jumping to the answer to the question as opposed to first, I mean, obviously countries do register versus use, but as I say, Japanese trademark law isn't all that foreign to the law of the U.S.
But
we don't have evidence in the record about it.
Well, we do have evidence in the deposition of Mr. Hanapataki that talked about how this issue came up, and his Japanese attorneys told him. But we had nothing. We weren't involved at that point. This was something that wasn't between us and anybody else in TMG. When I say us, I'm talking about the Seltzer parties exclusive of Flappy. This was an issue that was raised much later. And the only way it's relevant in this whole case is because the TMG parties are claiming that we had to give them a right of first refusal because we created this.
Right, and that's where you kind of do this little dance around whether, I mean, certainly USA Japan was sufficiently owned by Mr. Seltzer that right of first refusal doesn't apply to that.
Right.
The question is Flappy and Sirius, that you're both saying, yes, they are related, so they have all the rights and so forth, but they're not related to Mr. Seltzer, so that they're total strangers to this, so the right of first refusal somehow can't be invoked. It's a very contradictory position. And you also argue, I'll just throw this in, that where the license agreement says that USA Japan can't use cashmere in its name, whereas it is actually cashmere USA JPN, you say, it's a holding company. But I don't see why that has anything to do with the price of beans. It's still a company.
But it's,
And it's Kashmir USA Japan, and use the name Kashmir. I didn't see anything in the agreement that said you have to be advertising or you have to be holding out to the public.
But the point is, I mean, nobody knows about the company.
So what? It's the company's name, and you didn't ask.
Okay, I don't see any harm on that.
Well,
it'd be different.
They do.
Well, they do, but I think a lot of their arguments I don't agree with. But
we understood that much.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure you did. I guess the point is, certainly if they were using the word Kashmir USA JPN publicly on the internet selling goods, I could see that could be an
issue. But they're not doing anything public. They're a holding company.
That's right.
But
that's
I just don't see why that meant that they could call them. It's because you've said, boy, if you slip one inch away from the Kashmirs that are already registered, other people can just come in. I could go to Japan tomorrow and register Kashmir class number 38, apparently.
Well, that's what happens a lot of times in some of these jurisdictions. But we did have I'm not sure if it was the asset purchase agreement or the exclusive license agreement, there was an acknowledgement that Flatby was going to be using the name Kashmir Japan. Now, that's different than Kashmir USA JPN, but they did have that right under the asset purchase agreement because they already had a website that was saying Kashmir Japan before this, and it was expressly stated in one of these agreements that they can continue using, Flatby can continue using the word Kashmir Japan in promoting the
Kashmir. If they use that word, don't they have to maintain the same quality as Kashmir, USA?
Oh, but our position, I think if there's a lot of evidence that we...
Your position what?
The quality of the goods that Kashmir Japan was using far exceeded any standard of quality.
Well, I thought you were making some of your products under this trademark that don't contain chenille.
No.
Yes, you are.
There was a line brief.
There's this Kashmir RE.
I understand.
Line,
but
and so don't just say no.
No. Here's what I'm saying. During the course of the relationship between Mr. Seltzer and Mr. Miyakawa, he gave them authority to use other materials, including some linen and some cotton.
He gave whom authority?
Mr. Seltzer, when he owned the company, gave Mr. Miyakawa authority. Mr. Miyakawa had authority to do his own designs and the manufacturing. And Mr.
I don't understand. How can Seltzer authorize him to make an inferior product under the Kashmir name?
He made it under the Kashmir name, that's the critical thing.
If he had said, Mr. Miyakawa, you can make, soft clothes under some different name, I suppose Mr. Miyakawa could have made anything purchased through Flatby. But using the Kashmir name wasn't Mr. Seltzer's to give anymore.
No, he gave it to them. That happened back in 2006. And he was allowing Mr. Miyakawa did a sensational job in promoting this brand. That's why the company was so successful. And
this is not responsive.
Maybe I misunderstood the question. The brand, the quality exceeded. It wasn't inferior.
The product doesn't have chenille in it. People like chenille. I don't even know what it is, but it is.
It's a made up name.
Advertised as a chenille product.
Chenille just has the feel of a luxurious cashmere. It's sort of a made-up name. But the product was really designed for a winter line. And this whole issue of this non-chenille is when TMG approached Flatby, and they said they wanted a summer line. And Flatby created a summer line using a cotton as opposed to this heavier material. That was the request of TMG.
But you have this ambiguous exchange. The best you can do is this exchange with Mr. Reingold, who basically says, tell me what you're making. He never says, go ahead and make it out of non-chenille products. There are hundreds of products, if not thousands, made out of this cashmere stuff. And so I don't see any reason to think that Mr. Reingold isn't saying, well, if you have some idea for some more products, great, go ahead and do it. But I didn't see any fabric comment in there. And yet here is some new fabric that you are extracting out of that, the right to use the word Kashmir for
I think what we're saying is there may not have been a description in any documents, but the evidence is that there was a meeting in November, 2011 in Japan, where Mr. Miyakawa presented samples of this Kashmir reline with the cotton to Mr. Reingold, and the evidence is that he went on Facebook And he went to his wife and he says, this is fantastic. We want them to make this for us.
But he doesn't say use the Cashmere brand or anything or trademark.
But if you're sitting in a meeting right here and you say, here's
you have no solid evidence of this. You are trying to draw inferences from a very ambiguous record.
I don't think we are. I think we have the declarations or depositions of Mr. Hanapataki and Joe Lay, who were present at this meeting. We have some exchanges with Mr. Reingold about this Cashmere reline.
There was no trial, was there?
No.
Summary judgment.
So,
you don't usually decide cases on the basis of the discovery, right? You have a trial.
Particularly if we put on evidence.
In the room and somebody else in the room. It's nuts.
You know, we put on evidence. There is certain, maybe a factual issue then.
That's important, isn't it?
Well, but then I think it's improper for summary judgment to grant it. We put on declarations. We put on evidence that Mr. Reingold requested this summer line, and we showed him samples of it, and he went on Skype and showed it to his wife.
And then he has evidence that says he never authorized you to use the name Cashmere
So that's why there's a material issue of fact and dispute.
Let me ask you about a different question. This is about the distributors, TMG's distributors who were selling Japan. Now, are you saying that TMG encouraged them to do that, told them to do it?
Oh, my God, yes.
Contractually obligated them to do that?
They definitely...
Well, what's the evidence?
Well, here's one piece of evidence that we put in. It's hard to understand exactly from the reading of it. There's something called a hang tag. A hang tag is a piece of cardboard. We had a picture of it in the exhibits. It's a 2-inch by 2-inch piece of cardboard, and it has the logo, and it had writing in Japanese, care instructions in Japanese. And we know that when TMG owned the company, they were ordering these hang tags written in Japanese and giving them to these distributors. Now, the only reason you'd have a hang tag written in Japanese is because the goods are going to Japan. So when you say encouraging them, they were assisting them, certainly assisting them.
By making a tag?
But not making the tag, by shipping it to these people, the California distributors.
Of this issue is whether this particular commercial arrangement precluded gray market imports, or whether this particular commercial arrangement permits them. Because it can be either way.
We're not saying that if genuine Cashmere goods were being sold in Japan, that TMG would have liability for that. We're not saying that.
You have some reference to Costco Japan and
we're not saying
Cashmere's
what
were
what
there.
What we're saying is that if they're encouraging it and assisting it, then that's a breach of at least the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Because it's not within the reasonable expectations of the parties.
Suppose a distributor says to them, we're reselling some of what we've bought from you, TMG, in Japan, and we understand you have some, tags with Japanese language on it. Could you give us or sell us that? Would that be a bad faith on the part of TMG to cooperate with that?
I think it would be bad faith.
Really? Why isn't it in the contract?
Well, the contract,
if you don't want this stuff to get into Japan, then you say no. You police your distributors. Japan is mine, says Seltzer, and you just tell your distributors they can't resell in Japan. Now, if Seltzer did not make that a contractual provision, right?
Well, no, I think that's implied. No, it's not.
What do you mean implied?
Well, here's what I mean.
Implied that he will that TMG will police its distributors and prohibit them from selling in Japan?
We never said they have an obligation.
Implied they can't give them a hang tag or what?
I understood you to be saying exactly that.
No, we never said that. As a matter of fact, we said the exact opposite at least once in our brief, that if they are genuine goods, but what's happening here is these people, with knowledge they're being sold in Japan, are exercising their discretion in a manner that violates the implied covenant of good faith. And the reason, and the way they're doing it is they're drop shipping goods into Japan, they made direct sales into Japan, and they're giving hang tags.
Well, they presumably drop ship for all their distributors.
No, they don't. They don't drop ship to the port of Los Angeles to a Japanese freight forwarder who was selling it in Japan.
No, no. My point is, do they do drop shipping to their other to the other customers of their distributors, like Norway, right? If they have a distributor who sells in Norway, can the distributor ask them, well, don't send it to me for me to send to Norway. Send it directly to Norway.
Well, yeah,
does that happen?
I think what they
could
certainly do that. But that what
how is that different from shipping to Japan?
What they were doing is they were having the factories in Taiwan ship the goods to their California warehouse. At the California warehouse, their customers would either bring a truck and pick it up, so they weren't drop shipping it in that sense, or they were shipping it to some places. I think in New York they were shipping it. But what we found here is we had a lot of communications with this Pitney Manor, where we knew that she was selling in Japan. They knew she was selling in Japan. We had the deposition of Barbara Murray that confirmed all this. And what they were doing then is they were talking about using a freight forwarder. They had a scheme saying, let's do it this way. Nothing will be traced back to us to show that we're doing this. And they ship it to a Japanese freight forwarder at the port of Los Angeles, and those goods ended up in Japan. So were they drop shipping? It's almost like saying, you know, if I take an envelope, a letter, and I put it in
so
a mailbox.
So you'd be happier if it had been shipped directly from Taiwan to Japan?
The only thing shipped directly from Taiwan to Japan was to Flatby. No.
I say, would you be happier if they had shipped from Taiwan to Japan rather than Taiwan to Los Angeles to Japan?
I think if they knew they were being resold in Japan in violation of the license agreement, because this is a contract.
No, it's not a violation for the distributor to sell in Japan.
It's a violation for TMG to sell in Japan. So if TMG is shipping the goods to Japan, I mean, how are they? They're selling in Japan.
No, no.
Why would they ship them to Japan?
What? Why are they shipping? Because that's where their distributor's customers. Look, if the distributor says, I don't want you bothering shipping to me, and I reship to Japan. I resell in Japan. And I'd like you to ship to my Japanese customer. Now, that's extremely common.
That would be a breach, and not
no,
only
that
be,
isn't a breach it, of anything.
It was an admission. There was a letter written by their attorney that says that we cannot ship to people who resell in Japan. They acknowledge they cannot ship into. Their whole position is
talking about that. I'm talking shipment to the ultimate customer.
I think that's a sale in Japan.
So your position is if that's what TMG is doing, it's a sale in Japan. If that's what somebody else in the world is doing, who otherwise legitimately has gotten these goods, we have a different question.
If they're selling to somebody else and that person resells in Japan and TMG is not assisting and encouraging them to do it, then I would say that it's not a breach of the agreement.
And we have so much
evidence, at least there's a material issue effect in the Barrera case.
I think we have your point.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I allowed Mr. Klein to go over, so you can have two more minutes, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With respect to this last point, I just want to clarify. There is no evidence that TMG ever drop shipped to Japan. They didn't. The evidence that Mr. Klein refers to is evidence that a customer asked TMG to drop ship to Japan. And TMG said, no, we don't do that. We do not ship to Japan. There's no evidence that TMG ever shipped product to Japan.
So it's the customers who are drop shipping to Japan?
I don't know what the customers were doing. I don't think that there's any evidence.
But what about this Pitney, whatever it is, Manor?
Pitney Manor asked to drop ship to Japan and was told, no, we don't do that.
Does TMG drop ship anywhere?
It will drop ship goods, certainly it's drop shipped goods to Europe. It has drop shipped on behalf of other customers, but it doesn't drop ship to Japan, no.
Because that would be a violation of your exclusive distributorship arrangement with Flatby.
It certainly treads on that, yes, it does.
Well, it seems to me it would be, but that's...
They can't accept purchase orders from Japan. They have to redirect...
Right, I mean, you have to have given them something. You can't just give them something you call an exclusive distributorship and have everybody in the planet... distributing in Japan.
And that's correct. And they have two very important rights under the exclusive distributorship. They're the only Flatby is the only distributor in Japan. It's actually an exclusive license, excuse me, that then there is an exclusive distributor under that license. But But yeah, they're the only distributor located in there.
To get back to an earlier point, what exactly is the evidence that FBC's production of a different product doesn't have chenille is hurting you? Hurting your client?
The licensor has lost control of its own trademark.
I'm asking for harm.
The harm...
Since you're not supposed to be in Japan, I don't understand quite what your harm is. I thought, well, maybe you're worried about Americans buy something in Japan under the Cashmere name. It's not chenille. They don't like it. And it poisons their opinion of TMG. Is that what you're worried about?
Certainly worried about that. And Japanese customers...
Is there evidence about that?
There is no evidence of that in the record, Your Honor.
No evidence of harm from this manufacture of deviant goods in Japan under the Cashmere name?
Economic harm at this point is difficult to pinpoint, but we have lost control of a licensee who seems to think it can use the license, the trademark, in any way that it pleases.
Okay, so my question is whether you know how many other countries in the world TMG has registered the Cashmere, or is now the owner of the Cashmere trademark.
Your Honor, I don't know how many it has registered.
More than just the United States and Japan?
Yes, correct. But I know that they're working on registrations in Korea and China.
Okay.
I want to go back
one,
to...
One quick point, and then we have to wrap up.
The most important point from TMG's perspective in this litigation is that we take the license as we find it. You cannot read duties into that license that simply don't exist, not through the covenant of good faith and fair dealing, not through extrinsic evidence. It does contain very specific exclusive rights granted to the licensee, but it does not impose upon TMG some duty to police the downstream activities of its customers. It doesn't impose upon TMG a prohibition on selling goods to customers in the U.S. that may be selling goods on the internet to consumers in Japan. Those prohibitions could have been put in the license, and they weren't. And the fact is, the parties knew how to put exactly that kind of prohibition in the license.
Why didn't you just ask for an injunction against making a product that doesn't conform to the trademarked item, rather than canceling? Canceling is a very severe. I mean, you know, so the deal was Seltzer was going to retain Japan. You now want to kick him out of Japan, and take the whole world for TMG. And so, suppose there is a trademark violation in Japan by FBC that can be traced back to Seltzer. Then why not just enjoin that?
It's a point we'll take, Your Honor.
To take back Japan.
And had this matter proceeded to trial, we would have sought injunctive relief
so
and
could you
damages.
Have done that from a U.S. court, or would you have to do that in a Japanese court?
Well, there is a parallel proceeding in Japan with respect to a dispute over the trademark registration and trying to get that undone, okay. So to speak. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Apparently not. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case under advisement.